From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. About 1 in 88 children currently has autism in the United States. Temple Grandin was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3, more than 50 years ago. Since then, research has come a long way. Grandin explores some of the science as well as sharing her own experiences in her book, The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She spoke at Town Hall on May 20th, 2013.
Well, it's really great to be here tonight. A lot of stuff I want to talk about tonight. I think, first of all, maybe some of you don't know what autism is. Well, it's a big spectrum. One end of the spectrum, you've got half of Silicon Valley. The other end of the spectrum, you've got somebody who's nonverbal with a lot more problems. It's a big spectrum. It's also a developmental disorder. And it's not caused by psychological causes. And now the thing is, when does something become an abnormality? You know, a lot of these traits and the mild versions are just part of normal variation. When does geeky and nerdy and maybe kind of socially awkward become, mild autism or Asperger's? It's not clear. You know, research has shown that there's more creative careers in the siblings of people with bipolar disorder. And the techies have got more autism in their background. You see, you take out a few social circuits and you get circuits for making things like electrical power plants. Tesla today would be diagnosed with autism. Now, here are two individuals here. Then a lot of school systems would probably get diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Little Albert, no speech until age 3. What would happen to little Albert today? How many drugs would he be plastered up on? And how about little Stevie, a weird loner who brought snakes to school? He was bullied so much in his high school, he had to change high schools. Ended up going to the Cupertino Valley High School. And what saved him was the local computer club. You see, getting these kids involved with shared interests, that was the only places where I was not teased. But what worries me today is where some of these guys... Well, the junior edition would go today. I work in a technical industry, in a cattle industry, and there's a lot of people with gray hair that I know are undiagnosed on the spectrum. They run the maintenance shop. They run the computers. They're a guy that's really good with animals. There's a lot of them. And the problem you got with autism is it's such a big spectrum, and the kind of help that someone like me needs is different than somebody that's a lot more severe. And in order to get any special ed services in the school, you've got to have labels. And one of the things I talk about in the autistic brain is don't get locked into these labels. Parents will ask me, what's the most important thing you can do for an autistic kid? Well, if he's 3 years old with no language, I can tell everybody the same thing. 20, 30 hours a week, one-to-ones, ABA, get them talking, teach them turn-taking, got to work with that kid. But then once they kind of go into two different groups, a group that becomes fully verbal and maybe some moderate, and they diverge off into different groups that really need different kinds of services. It is a behavioral profile. It's not precise. We've got an entire chapter in the autistic brain on the history of the diagnosis and how the diagnosis has changed over the decades. Really kind of crazy. You know, nobody's changing the diagnosis of tuberculosis over the decades. They've refined it. They can tell you whether or not it's resistant to the drugs or not, but they haven't changed it. Now, in 1943, the first paper on autism was published. And in the 50s and the 60s, they thought it was psychologically caused. That's now known to be BS. And it got mixed up with schizophrenia. That's more BS. And then in 1980, they said you had to have onset before 30 months. In other words, you had to have speech delay. You didn't have some kind of speech problem early age. The kid wasn't autistic. And then they added PDD-NOS, pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified. Now, what kind of a diagnosis is that? See, the thing about the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, is it's half science. The other half is doctors squabbling around conference room tables in a hotel room. You know, that's what it is. Then in 1994, they added Asperger's syndrome. In other words, you could be on the autism spectrum with no speech delay. You know, that's basically geeks and nerds. Now, they're going to take out the Asperger's and kind of tighten it up because one of the members of the committee goes, we can't have everybody just quirky and nerdy, you know. getting a medical diagnosis. And they're going to call the Asperger kids social communication disorder and then try to say it's not autism. That doesn't make any sense, because in the verbal kids, the social awkwardness is the one thing that seems to be universal. Circuits in the brain for face recognition and recognizing facial expressions and things like it are kind of not hooked up. Genetics is complicated. You can forget about what you learned in Mendelian biology, and that's not going to cover it. You're talking about little tiny SNPs. A SNP is a single little nucleotide pair getting switched around, hundreds of these. I'm getting over a cold. I'm sorry, I'm going to be doing some coughing. I can't help it. I'm going to have to pop some cough drops. This is kind of rude, so I don't get a too big a coughing fit. But it's a complicated genetics. Well, I've been looking at genetics lately. It's really kind of interesting. You know, less than 2% of your DNA actually codes for making a person. So what does all the other DNA do? Well, a big part of that is going to be the operating system. It tells the coding DNA what to do. Yeah, there's one problem. We don't know how it works. Don't know how it works at all. And you know, that's not normally what you think double helix ought to look like. But you fold up the double helix, and you bend it all around, and operating system goes against coding DNA in some kind of mathematical thing. That's not really very well understood. It's complicated. The thing I've observed is if you kind of load the dice on both sides of the family with various things like anxiety, maybe some dyslexia, a little bit of autism, maybe some epilepsy, some migraines, some different things, you tend to be more likely to have kids with problems. Personality traits are sort of like the music mixing board. They're continuous traits. Okay, imagine one of those sliders is for how anxious you are. Another slider, how much of a visual thinker you are. Another slider, do you like to take risks? That's the dopamine system. You can adjust these traits. And at what point does it become an abnormality? There's no black and white dividing line. Now, I am a total visual thinker. I think completely in pictures. The HBO movie did a great job of showing how I think in pictures. And that really helped me in my work with livestock, because I could test run equipment. It helped me understand animals. Animals don't think in words. They think in sensory. Now, when I was in my 20s and my 30s, even in my 40s, I didn't understand how my thinking was different. And I had a really interesting talk with a researcher over at Microsoft today, and he wanted to learn more about how I think. And if I asked him, think about a church steeple, he got this vague generalized one. I only see specific ones. There is no vague generalized one. All my concepts are made out of specific pictures. And he's going like, wow, that's really different than me. But it was a revelation for me to see how my thinking was different. Well, I used to joke around that I had a big visual circuit. Well, it turns out that I do have a rather big visual circuit. And this particular circuit in the brain, I'm probably on the upper 25% size. This circuit is normally formed. I'm going to be showing you some other circuits later on that are really crazy. That one actually has normal anatomy. I always like to show off my drawings. See, the thing is, when you're a weird geek, I had to sell my work and not myself. I'm seeing too many kids like me, got some kind of label, maybe they're dyslexic, maybe they got something like oppositional defiant disorder. I sort of have problems with that being a medical disorder and conduct disorder. That's a medical disorder. I'm too much of a hardcore biologist to buy that. That used to be called juvenile delinquents in the 50s. But when you're a kid that's socially awkward, you don't do very well in the interview process. And I can remember going to an ag engineering meeting and no one wanted to talk to me because I was just too weird. And then I'd whip out one of my drawings. Then I got respect. So if you have a kid that's good in art, something like this, put his work on your phone. So you've always got it to show. We got to start networking. How do you get them into a job? Well, let's find those back doors. And the movie showed perfectly how those back doors worked. Lady liked my hand-embroidered shirt. No computer in China did this. But the shirt I had on, I actually had used my third grade embroidery skill on. Well, this scan done at the University of Utah showed that basically I got water in my math department, and got the blue parts full of cerebral spinal fluid, and back in my left parietal area, kind of trashed out working memory, don't remember sequence well, kind of wrecked multitasking, made algebra impossible. You see, you get different labels, you tend to have uneven skills. And parents will ask me, what's the most important thing I can do for autism? If the kid's three, I can give you a blanket answer. But when they get older, I got to know more about the kid. What exactly are his problems? Getting bullied in school? I got to get some idea of what his level of functioning is. So I'll ask questions like, well, could he read USA Today and tell you what was in an article? You know, I want to get some idea of what the level of functioning was. Now, Malcolm Gladwell says that if you have enough practice and enough access to, things, you can learn to do anything. Well, in 1968, Bill Gates and I had access to this state-of-the-art IBM teletype terminal. He learned to program computers. I tried it. I couldn't do it. You're not going to make me a programmer. Algebra was totally incomprehensible. Yes, I agree with the practice. I had to work on developing my drawing skill. And my mother always worked on broadening my interest in art. A lot of these kids want to just draw the same drawing over and over again. No, they got to do other things, broaden it. For me, it would have been endless horse heads. For some kid today, it's endless the same anime character. We'll say, let's do his car. Let's do his house. Let's broaden that skill out. This is one of my most important slides. It's the different kinds of minds. And in the Autistic Brain book, I got a whole chapter where I list jobs for the different kinds of minds. I'm the photorealistic visual thinker, the object visualizer. Couldn't do algebra. Some kids that can't do algebra, let's jump them to geometry and trig. So how did I get through college? I got to thank the math fad. The national math standard in 66 was finite math. Probability, matrices, and statistics. And I was able to do that with a ton of tutoring. Then you've got the more mathematical mind. This is your programmer, your engineer. These kids tend to have trouble with reading. And then you've got the word thinker. Now, people ask me, how do you know what kind of thinker your kid is? It usually shows up in third or fourth grade. Now, the so-called normal kids tend to be more even in the skills, less likely to have uneven skills. Well, I was good at art. It showed up. Then maybe the fourth grader is good in math. He'll be good at math. Don't make them do baby math. Let them do college math if they can do it. But I'm not suggesting putting them in college. You can do college math in the third grade classroom. But don't hold them back. They'll need some tutoring and reading. And then you get the verbal kids that love history. Then you got some people that are pure auditory learner. And that's not me. They learn totally through their ears. Now, there's evidence that these two types of visualizers, the ones like me and the mathematicians, really do exist. There's scientific research behind this. And in the autistic brain, we reviewed all this research. You know, this is the thing with the different kinds of minds. When I did my 2010 TED talk, this is something I had just observed. But when I got to working on this book, I got to surfing the internet late at night, and I found these obscure papers. And then I found more papers. That what I talked about in my TED talk, this is the science behind it. But I had independently had figured out the thing about the different kinds of minds, but it was really good to see scientific studies that verified it. And there are references in the book on this. The two kinds of visualizers, it really is true. And they were finding this in more normal populations. Engineers versus artists, for example, were tested. You know, you have several different ways that you can do math, more verbally, or more visual spatial. And here's the pattern thinking mind. This praying mantis is made with a single sheet of folded paper. No cuts, no scotch tape. What you see in the background is the folding pattern. That's not my kind of mind. You know, that's the mind of the engineer, the programmer, those sorts of things. And here are some great origami stars that some kids gave to me. There's a beautiful origami dragon. We got that picture off the internet, but really cool things. Again, I always like to show off drawings. is when you're a weird geek, you got to prove to people you're not stupid. One of the things that motivated me, people ask, well, what motivated you to do stuff like clean horse stalls and do all these different jobs? I wanted to prove to people I could do it. See, I grew up with people thinking I was mentally retarded. And when I got out into my 20s, I wanted to prove I could do it. That was a really big motivator. And there's a gorgeous picture from Jessie Park. She's a more of a moderate level person with autism. And Grant Marnier, his mother took his paper shredding stuff and turned it into gorgeous art. He's starting to go professional. I told his mom, I said, this guy's good enough to go professional. All right, what's that mess? That's the remains of the Fukushima nuclear power plant. And one of the big things that worries me, with all the emphasis now on STEM and math, science, technology, engineering, math, they got great programs for elementary school kids. I'd do great in them. But then when you get to algebra, I'm going to hit a wall. So what do? Kick out all our art minds, all our visual thinkers? I don't think so. Because if a visual thinker had been on this design team, this mess wouldn't happen. And when I found out why it happened, I almost couldn't believe it. I can't design a nuclear power plant. But there's no way when you live next to the sea that I'm going to put their super important emergency generator for running the super important emergency cooling pump in a non-waterproof basement. Because it sort of doesn't work underwater. I've been watching a whole mess with the Boeing airplane with a real interest. Yeah, they did a mathematical thing, very linear, very non-associative. The risk if the batteries are perfect. Well, he didn't look at all the problems there's been with lithium-ion batteries when they get damaged, with them burning. How about 3 cargo jets that burned up hauling computer batteries? Completely burned up. Cargo jets. Not 1 cargo jet, 3 cargo jets. You drop a pallet load of lithium-ion batteries on the tarmac at the airport and it starts to catch on fire. Shouldn't that have been in the risk analysis? Well, they didn't think outside the airplane there. You see, my kind of mind is needed on the design team. Let's go back to Steve Jobs. He was an artist and designed the user interface. And then the engineers have to make the inside of the phone work. You see, you need both kinds of minds. So what do you need? In my work with animals, I noticed that cattle were afraid of a lot of little small visual details that most people tend to not notice. Like the cattle didn't want to go into the veterinary facility because the American flag was there waving. Well, why didn't they see that? Notice people don't see visual detail. I get asked about slaughter plants all the time. Are they afraid of getting slaughtered? I find them more afraid of a chain hanging down, a shadow, a reflection on a piece of metal. You get rid of those distractions, they'll walk right in. In fact, if you want to see my slaughter plant designs, you can go on YouTube, Beef Plant Video Tour with Temple Grandin. Check that out. Okay, how many people here notice that that animal gaze is locked onto the sunbeam? Not very many. You see, I have to train the people that are less visual to see these things. One of the things I try to teach veterinary students that I teach and the animal science students is you got to look at the sensory detail in the environment that that animal's looking at. And I talk about this in my book, Animals in Translation, and they do have some copies of some of my animal books. But I learned, and I had to get into my 40s and 50s before I fully, completely learned the extent of how it's difficult for a lot of people to see this. That's so obvious to me that animals' gaze is locked onto that sunbeam. And I had a lab with my students, and I talked about a chain hanging down in a chute. So we have a cattle handling facility on campus. So I get the chain waving in the chute like this. I got 12 students that come in. Only 2 saw it. It was right there, right obvious. You know, they were like 10 feet from it. Animals' world is sensory-based. It's not word-based. You know, if you want to understand animals, you got to get away from language. There's a whole world out there, and it's not language-based. Somebody, I was being asked at this cocktail party we had beforehand about rescue dogs. Well, the rescue dogs have often been abused, and you often will get fear memories. Betsy Lerner, my agent's got a little dog, and he's afraid of baseball hats. If you don't have a baseball hat on, then he's fine. You got a baseball hat on, he don't like baseball hats very much.
Temple Grandin, an autism rights activist and the author of The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She spoke at Town Hall on May 20th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of her talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Temple Grandin in a moment, 827, 94.9 KUOW. After claiming they never used Agent Orange, Ontario officials accept a report showing workers were doused in the defoliant. We'll hear from the man whose cancer prompted him to uncover the truth. Also, a conversation with a researcher who studies the expressions of Lego people and says Lego faces are getting angrier, and he's worried about the possible effect on children. And a bill passed by the Connecticut legislature says the Wright brothers were not the first people to fly an airplane. Lawmakers there claim the first flight was made 2 years earlier by German-born aviator Gustav Whitehead in their state, Connecticut. All three items tonight in the 11 o'clock hour. Weather outlook for the Seattle area for tonight, lows near 50, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. Friday highs mid to upper 60s, cloudy with a chance of showers in the morning, partly sunny in the afternoon. Looking ahead to Friday night, lows around 50, partly cloudy, and Saturday, yummy, highs in the 70s and mostly sunny.
Gifts of stock and other appreciated assets are a great way to support KUOW and receive tax advantages at the same time. For information about how to make a gift of securities, contact Matt Albertson at 206-221-2732 or email majorgifts@kuow.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Autism is a developmental disorder characterized by social impairment, communication difficulties, repetitive interests or behaviors, and occasional cognitive delays. Temple Grandin is an activist for autism rights. In her latest book, she talks about genetic research that links brain science and behavior, as well as sharing her own experiences growing up with autism. She spoke at Town Hall on May 20th, 2013.
Now, there's evidence that language covers up things like visual thinking, because there's a type of Alzheimer's where art ability sometimes starts to come out. And when Van Gogh painted Starry Night, he was putting mathematics in it. I go, oh man, that's cool, trippy. Now, an important thing for anybody that works with people that are autistic, I'm a bottom-up thinker, not top-down. That's a very important concept. Everything is learned by specific example. You take specific examples and you put them into categories. Like dogs are put in one category and there's specific individual dog pictures. Cats are put in another category. You want to learn words like up and down. You got to use five or six different examples for down. I put the cup down. I laid down on the bed. I went down on the hill. The plane went down and landed. Got to use several different examples. My thinking is also associative and not linear. And you want to see something really cool, you can type in Temple Grandin USA Today. USA Today's got like a really fabulous brain scan and shows that I have a gigantic visual association circuit made out of part of my language circuit. I'm going, boy, that's really trippy. Unfortunately, didn't have that scan in time for the book. Okay, I want to show you how associative thinking works and how it works kind of like a search engine. Okay, let's say I start thinking about the United Airlines terminal in Chicago. Well, I could start going specific pictures in a glass structure category, or I could go specific pictures in an airport category. So you see I can switch from right there from glass structures to airports. There are no generalized pictures. Okay, glass structure, Biosphere in Arizona, Crystal Palace, and then there's Crystal Palace in Texas. Greenhouse in Colorado. How about airports? Well, I can start going through airport pictures in my mind. You see, it's all specific. I'd love to go exploring in this hangar. They'd have all kinds of old weird aviation stuff in there. Now, when I asked an astrophysicist one time what he saw when I asked him about a church steeple, he didn't see specific ones like what I see. He saw a motion of people singing and praying. I go, oh, man, this guy worked on the Hubble Space Telescope. That's very, very different than me. Cattle form very specific images. Like, for example, if the cows are used to being handled by a man on horse, and that's safe, if they suddenly see a man on foot, they get scared. But think about it. Man on a horse looks totally different than a man on the ground. I mean, horses have the same thing, too. You can have a horse that's been abused by a rider who will be fine for shoeing. You can have a horse that's been abused by somebody on the ground. Every time you try to do veterinary work, he's throwing a fit, but he may be fine for riding. You see, because it's sensory specific, that's how their memory works. And I find that when people are trying to troubleshoot a problem with a kid, problem with a piece of equipment, they have a hard time categorizing problems. The normal human mind tends to overgeneralize. You know, what's the most important thing you can tell me about autism? I can only give you a single answer for little nonverbal kids. Do I have something wrong with the equipment? Maybe the people don't operate it right. Where is the problem? I got to start asking more questions. Now, the thing is, we need all different kinds of minds. Well, let's look at these eccentric guys. They're some of the lucky people on the spectrum. You got the Mohawk guy, you got the Elvis guy, and you got the old hippie my age there. And they went to heaven for geeks there. But the thing that worries me is I'm seeing too many youngsters coming up to me. Youngsters much less severe than I was. They're getting all hung up on their autism, and they're kind of getting a handicap mentality. Because you've got to stretch these kids. No surprises. You can't throw them into the deep end of the pool. You can't have a sudden change. But if you don't stretch them, they don't develop. And when I was 15, I didn't want to go to my aunt's ranch. And mother gave me a choice. I could go for 1 week, or I could go for all summer. But not going, that wasn't going to be an option. Wasn't going to have that option of not going. But I'm seeing too many smart kids. Oh, poor little Joey's got Asperger's, so we'll buy his hamburger for him. No, he's got to walk up to the counter and learn how to order that hamburger. I mean, we have got to start doing that. And the other big thing I'm concerned about is work skills. Boy, did I learn work skills. Mother arranged a sewing job for me when I was 13 that she just set up with a local lady who did seamstress work. When I was 15, I was cleaning horse stalls. When I was 16, I was rebuilding our ski tow house. Then when I got out to Arizona, I was painting signs for the Arizona State Fair Carnival, kind of freelance stuff. But you see, there's kind of a discipline of work they got to learn. That even in a job that you really want to do, there's going to be some boring stuff that you don't really want to do. You know, they got to learn that. You know, and I've had a job coach call me up. This guy had gone to a prestigious art school, managed to get through prestigious art school just fine with no aid or anything. Gets his first job, and he doesn't want to make his employer stupid bird videos. And I go, and the job coach says, it's executive function problems. I go, BS. How did he get through an art school? Because he wanted to. Well, what you want to be doing is make the best dumb bird videos and put them in your portfolio so you can use them to get another better job somewhere. But you don't just walk out. No, that's just ridiculous. Now, when I was putting the brain scanner, I found it was much more interesting to look at pictures of things than pictures of people. But if we didn't have people interested in things, wouldn't have any computers, wouldn't have any electricity, airplanes. I think we'd be living in caves. Who do you think made the first stone spear, after all? It wasn't the yak-yaks around the campfire, that's for sure. How are we going to help these kids to succeed? You got to stretch them. Mentors. My science teacher was a really important mentor. And there's a lot of retired people that could help a lot of these kids that are kind of different. And the learning of working skills. Also, I'm seeing kids are not just getting together and making up their own games, where you negotiate how you're going to do things. And I got Julie here, my web mistress, who works on my web page, my livestock web page. She's got two little kids. They were having a great time busting open rocks to see what's inside them, and then making a game out of stuff to do with rock pieces. You know, but that is negotiation. She says to get a bit grumpy when you pull them off the video games. But I'm seeing some really bad stuff. Kids getting so addicted to video games, they're not doing anything else. If they were going into that industry, then I'd be fine with it. They learn how to make video games and actually work for one of the video game companies. I'm fine with that. But I want to see people get employed. Build the area of strength. My ability in art was always encouraged, and I was encouraged to do lots of different kinds of art. You know, don't make a kid do the baby work, you know. Let them advance. There's tons of great online resources. Udacity, free programming classes, Coursera, edX, those are your three big websites for free stuff. And then that's one of my designs done in SketchUp, a free software. There's all kinds of great things. How about maker community groups, hackerspace, all kinds of great things. The only places I was not teased was horseback riding, model rockets, and electronics lab. Get kids involved with shared interests. Agriculture, 4-H, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, hackerspace groups, robots, the band, music, school play, all those kinds of things. And here's some really fun online science projects. Well, maybe I wasn't doing too much studying in school, but boy, I get a lot of work skills. I made our ski tow house look really nice. And I had to decorate it in a way that other people would like. And I don't think space aliens or Star Trek on it would have been what they would have wanted. My science teacher was a really important mentor. He got me motivated studying. I hadn't done any studying until my senior year in high school. Then fortunately, my mother got together with a little local college, and they kind of let me in on probation. And I got through the math requirement, because thank goodness in 66 it wasn't algebra. Everybody back in 66 took finite math. Getting worried about some of these requirements, because you need us visual thinkers. You see, I'm the industrial designer, and then the other engineers are the engineers. Let's look at that mess when airbags were killing babies. That's another design mistake I would have never made. You see, what happened is they had a design spec was got to hold in an adult man with no seatbelt. Well, that's just impossible to do without killing babies. Well, I wouldn't have made that mistake. I would have looked at those videos and go, forget it. No, babies are going to die. You see, but they don't see it. It's just like most people in here didn't see that cattle looking at that sunbeam, even though he's locked onto that sunbeam like radar. I'm getting worried that our educational system's not... I think our educational system now is going to be stimulating the math thinker, but I'm worried about more my kind of thinker, because we're going to have a lot of bad design mistakes on projects without people like me. We don't need another Fukushima mess. Okay, taking off hands-on classes, it's the worst things the schools have done. Those classes teach practical problem solving. I'm talking about woodworking, sewing, cooking, and there's a lot of kids that are kind of quirky and different. We're a two-year community college degree in auto shop. They would love it. Guess what? Good jobs, shortage. The oil industry's screaming for welders right now. And I know there's a lot of controversy about fracking and all the stuff like that. I'll tell you one thing you got to have so you don't get water contamination when you do oil drilling. You got to have really good pipe casings that are welded right, cemented right. You got to make that thing right. And then you don't get the water contamination. Some states are beginning to put the hands-on classes back in. Arkansas and Texas are starting to put them back in, realizing that was a huge mistake, just going overboard on one thing. Here's the stuff that saved me. If I hadn't had horseback riding, carpentry projects, I would have just gone nowhere. We need people in this country that can do stuff. Well, we've gotten government now that they just know how to fight. They don't know how to do anything. One thing about them, there's a lot of people here that are from the 50s. Man, we got stuff done. Man, we did cool stuff. Went to the moon. We built the interstate highway system. We did bipartisan good stuff. And I'm seeing too many of these quirky kids. You know, unfortunately, the school systems have got to have these labels in order to give any services at all. But I get worried on the high end of the spectrum, the kids getting held back. I'm seeing too many smart, quirky kids, and I know this varies from state to state. They're actually on Social Security playing video games, and they become recluse in their house and won't come out of the house. Now, there's some that are really anxious. They're going to need a little help from medication. I've been on antidepressants for 35 years and stopped the constant panic attacks that I was having when I got into my early 30s. You know, there's way too many drugs given out to little kids. But a little dab of Prozac, especially us visual thinkers and some of the mathematical minds, keep you off the drugs and alcohol and all the kinds of bad things. You know, successful employment. Sell your work and not yourself to get the job. Then you need to get, your boss needs to understand, they got to tell you stuff specific. They can't say to you something, well, just develop new software. That's too vague. They got to tell you very specifically what's required in the job. And when social mistakes are made, you don't scream and yell and you don't be vague. You got to pull them aside and explain exactly what they did wrong. I'll give you an example. My first construction project. Very first project back in 1974, I criticized some not very pretty welding, and I said it looked like pigeon doo-doo. And Harley, the plant engineer, pulled me into his office, and he said, we have to nip these little cancers before they metastasize. You're going to go up into the cafeteria and to like Whitey, that was the name of the welder, and apologize for all the, you know, about the pigeon doo-doo. Now, I wasn't going to go up there and tell him his welding was wonderful, but I did go up and apologize for using all the rude talk. But you see, old Harley, the engineer, he handled that perfectly. He didn't chew me out in front of anybody. He didn't yell and scream. He just pulled me in his office, shut the door, very calmly told me, and I had to go right now. He said, Whitey's up in the cafeteria. He's by himself. You go up there and you apologize. Now, okay, let's say a good job for 12-year-olds. How about tour guide at a museum? Well, someone's got to demonstrate to them. How do you interact with visitors? The correct distance to stand, correct greeting. I'm seeing too many kids that don't know how to shake hands properly. Oh, I learned that when I was 8. Mother had me put on my party dress. I had to greet each guest at the door, shake hands, and then I served hors d'oeuvres. And since I was a server, I wasn't supposed to do too much talking to the guests. But that taught important social rules. And people ask me, how did you get the guts to walk up to the farmer ranchman guy and ask for his card? Just like it shows in the movie, I actually did that.
Temple Grandin, an autism rights activist and the author of The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She spoke at Town Hall on May 20th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of her talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon. KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Temple Grandin in a moment. 844 94.9 KUOW. What would you put in a letter to your son or daughter? How do you transcend the moment and pen words of advice or love that they can carry with them all their lives? Actor Paul Stettler asked himself those questions when he sat down to write a letter to his son. He was inspired by a letter his dad had written to him years before. It became the subject of a new play Paul's curated called Dear Dad. The play features the intimate letters of famous American fathers, including John F. Kennedy, John Steinbeck, and Jackson Pollock. A conversation with Paul Stettler tomorrow morning in the 9 o'clock hour. Forecast for the Seattle area for tonight, lows near 50, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. Friday highs mid to upper 60s, cloudy with a chance of showers in the morning, partly sunny in the afternoon. Friday night, lows around 50, partly cloudy. Saturday highs somewhere in the 70s and mostly sunny skies. We're going to hear the story about a rare happening, an alpha male chimpanzee adopting and caring for a young orphan chimp, also a male. Seattle resident Tom Dolger tells of his dramatic transition from an Aspen ski patrol job to teaching writing to middle schoolers at Lakeside School in Seattle. And Ira Flatow, host of NPR's Science Friday, talks about science journalism, science funding, and science politics. All three of these items next hour. beginning right after the 9 o'clock news.
KUOW and Pacific Northwest Ballet present Next Step, a choreographic showcase featuring emerging PNB talent and accompanied by the Seattle Youth Symphony Orchestras, June 14th at McCaw Hall. Learn more on the events page at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Temple Grandin is a professor of animal behavior at Colorado State University and an autism rights activist. In 2010, she was named one of the most influential people in the world by Time magazine. She spoke about growing up with autism at Town Hall on May 20th, 2013. Next, she takes questions from the audience.
I am a military wife and I have four children. All three of my boys are autistic. And I would like to ask your advice.
And how old are the boys?
Age 2, 4, and 9.
Okay.
They have varying severity. My youngest is quite severe. My oldest is high functioning. What advice would you have for military families who face inconsistent living arrangements, spouses deploying, a lot of variables in their condition? How would you advise them to support their children when it's hard to remain consistent?
Well, it's hard because when you're constantly going to different bases and things like that?
Yes, frequently moving, rotations of deployment where the spouse is gone for 9 months to a year at a time.
Well, try to have some things in their life that no matter where they're living, they have some stuff that's the same.
Okay.
You know, and it could be simple things. So, what are some of their favorite things? You can make sure that, you know, if you go to another base, you have that.
Yeah.
No matter which spouse it is, they get to do their favorite things with.
Sure. How about for children who, you know, for my 9-year-old son, it's hard for him to have conversations on the phone. So when my husband is gone for great lengths of time, how can...
Well, what about on Skype? Can he have conversations?
It's a challenge, but do you think he's what I would think is a pattern thinker. Do you think it would be easier for him to write letters? Or
maybe he'd be better off communicating by email then. Well, then try that. You know, use the method that works the best.
Okay.
Then you can communicate by email, and that's usually easier. Easier for the person who's deployed to communicate back, too.
Well, thank you. You're really an inspiration. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very, very much.
Dr. Grandin, thank you so much for coming here. I have a little girl with autism.
How old?
7. If you could travel back in time and give yourself, your 7-year-old self, advice, what would it be?
Well, one thing, of course, nobody understood the sensory problems when I was a child. And, I tell you, 50s girls' clothes were really horrible. I mean, girls have really comfortable things to wear today. But a lot of things that were done right with me. You see, in the 50s, kids were taught manners in a much more rigid sort of way. And that actually was good. Because I'm seeing kids come up to me, they don't know how to shake hands. Nobody's taught them. You see, you've got to just demonstrate it to them. So how your daughter's doing?
She's doing fairly well.
She's doing very well. Good.
Yeah, she's verbal. She's
enjoying. She's fully verbal?
Yeah.
Okay, well, good. Help her develop her strengths.
Thank you.
Hi, I have a son who's 15 and a half years old. He's high functioning. One big issue we have, you talked about family issues and complexities. My son cannot stand to listen to his sister chew.
He doesn't like the sound of chewing.
But specifically her chewing. And I know this is crazy. But the thing is that... I heard something on the radio once that that people can be attuned to specific.
Well, there can be certain sounds that they just get.
And
really,
so maybe she creates the sounds that are just the sounds that drive him nuts. But what I'd like to know is, how can I help my son in this?
And the only sound that bothers him is his sister's chewing.
Pretty much.
Every other sound seems to be okay. Because a more common thing with sound sensitivity, it's certain loud things. Smoke alarm, fire alarms, firecrackers going off, stuff like that.
No, this is it makes him crazy. He cannot stand it. He'll get angry. He'll run out.
Well, maybe he wears a headset when she says.
We try. He can't stand the headset in his ears. So I just didn't know if there's any research being done on how to help.
Well, the problem with these sensory areas, these sensory things, is there's a real need to be doing research on this stuff. And you can't assign subjects a treatment based on an autism diagnosis, because that's too variable. You've got to get down, okay, what is specifically the sensory problem that the guy's having, and study the specific sensory problems. And I think it's hard for a lot of normal people to kind of get it through their head that this stuff's really a problem, because for some individuals it makes it impossible to function in just a lot of normal things.
We don't have any normalcy around mealtimes. Just have to separate.
Now, he can
people.
Go in a restaurant with tons of noise, and that's fine?
Noises don't bother him.
Just her chewing. What about you chewing or somebody else
chewing?
Well,
if I slurp, yeah.
He doesn't like slurping.
Yes.
And she can't learn to chew differently or something.
It's really, okay. It's complicated. I know, it's crazy, but I just wanted
yeah, and
if
that's
there was
not,
anywhere
that,
I
that's
take
a new
him,
one.
Or,
I'd be perfectly honest, I've never heard something that specific before.
Yeah, it's my life.
Okay.
Hi, I've been working with a 17-year-old autistic boy for about 5 months now, and it seemed like for the first...
Is he verbal?
Yes, he's verbal.
Fully verbal, or moderate, kind of?
Moderate, it's more like he doesn't like certain words.
Yeah, so, see, the thing, if, see, before I can advise you, I got to figure out where he's at.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's verbal.
And he's 17 years old. Can he read a newspaper
yeah,
and tell
read,
you what's in it?
He's, like, obsessed with, like, reading politics and sports.
Well, can he tell you, like, who won the game, who the coach was, and stuff
yes,
like that?
But he doesn't really like to, like, just tell me a bunch of things. He just, like, he'll more talk to himself, you know.
Well,
really
I'm trying
quietly.
To, what I'm trying to do is to figure out, okay, now try to figure out what level he's working at and what is his problem.
Well, the biggest problem is he has extreme anxiety over making choices. And so, you know, like putting together a peanut butter and jelly sandwich might take him 45 minutes. So
okay.
I've been trying to work with him.
So he's having problems with just planning how to do it.
Yeah.
I had anxiety. I can remember when I did my first talk in graduate school and I panicked and I walked out. You see, now you got to figure out, now is the problem with making the sandwich sort of an executive function planning problem, or is he just get anxious and can't do it? You know, is it anxiety or is it planning problems?
Yeah. He has a hard time choosing between two options, and sometimes he'll scream and just, you know, have a meltdown over if I force him to choose between two things.
Like he can't choose between whether he puts peanut butter on it or jelly on it?
Or like which piece of bread to spread the peanut butter on, which piece of bread to spread the jelly
on.
Yeah,
see, that's more of a planning problem. He's having trouble planning doing the task.
Right.
And you know, you notice I've had to ask a lot of questions here. See, again, the normal mind tends to overgeneralize. And I find the same thing on troubleshooting animal behavior problems. Someone will say, well, my horse is crazy. Well, I don't know what you mean by that. What's a horse doing that's crazy? I absolutely can't answer that. But I get asked those questions all the time.
So my question...
See, and I have to dig it out of you so I can build a picture up in my mind of what this guy's problem is. And he's obviously got a problem with planning a task.
Yes.
Can he get dressed easily?
He can dress himself, but he has a hard time choosing which
clothes... All right, you see, that's the planning, choosing which clothes.
Yes.
You see, that's a problem with the planning. You see, he's got some bad executive function problems.
Yes.
That isn't just anxiety. I mean, giving him Prozac is probably not going
to
fix
that. And he seems to daydream all the time, you know. If I tell him, dinner is ready, could you come out now, he'll walk to the doorway or something, and he's just, and he'll turn away and just, you know, start mumbling to himself for a while, and then he'll walk a few more steps, and then he'll ask some bizarre question that is completely unrelated, like, when's the last day of joy errands? Like, he says that to me, like, almost as if, and then I think, oh, he wants me
to. He can't pull
to...
it. There's a real problem here with executive function.
Yeah, you think that's what
That's
it is.
Not just anxiety. But you see how much questions I had to do before we could even start looking at that. And now I'm going to have to go to the next question.
So what do you think... Like, because he asked this thing, like, last day of this, you know, last day of books, last day of joy, last day of, going to mom's last day of, he's just, it's like.
See, well, it seems like he can't, he has problems going to the next thing. Okay, so I take the bread out of the refrigerator, take out two pieces of bread, you know, and I spread peanut butter on it. Okay, so he might get the two pieces of bread out, and then he doesn't know what, like, what to do with them.
Right.
The next step.
Right.
One of the things that might help would be a video showing the whole task. Because some of these kids, if you break it up into, like, picture steps, they still don't get it. You have to do it's like whole task teaching. In there's a book called How Can I Talk If My Lips Don't Move by Tita Makapadahay. And he's a nonverbal person with autism, types independently. And he described how he had to learn how to put a T-shirt on. And it had to be put on, like, over 2 minutes, really slow, like take 30 seconds just to pull it over the head so he could feel how it goes over the head. Because if he did it too fast, he didn't get how the T-shirt went over the head. Well, I think you've got some of these kinds of problems, joining the tasks together. And maybe showing some videos. I tried making a video of making a sandwich.
Okay.
And see how that works of some of these different things you want him to do.
Okay, thank you.
And then maybe he could have it on a phone or something, or an iPad or something, and he can watch it and then know what to do.
Yeah.
You see, because a lot of these kids, if you break it up into steps, they don't get it.
But do you think that the thing with the last day, like, what do you think that is?
I don't know what that is, but I want to maybe we'll stop that by he can't. Something as simple as making a peanut butter sandwich, he can't get to the next step. Okay, over here.
Yeah. So I have two questions. One, what age did you discover that you had autism?
Well, I didn't really know fully until I was, you know, older than you were. So you got to remember, when I was your age, there were no books about this. And what are you good at? I don't really want to talk about autism.
Well,
what's your favorite subject in school?
Well, the thing that I mostly have trouble with because I get really stressed sometimes.
Why are you getting stressed?
Well, sometimes there's pressure on me, and sometimes I just can't really take it. I try to take a break from it, but it sometimes just doesn't really work.
You get stressed in what way? Where do you have a problem?
Well, mostly because I have trouble with school a lot because.
Well, you see, you're telling me stuff that's too vague. I mean, what gives you trouble at school?
Well, I
doing your math homework, doing
sometimes
reading.
Sometimes I have to do some neat work, and it gets really stressful. Sometimes test questions can be a bit too hard for me, and I get really nerved about it. So I need to take some advice from you.
Oh, I want you to tell me, what are you good at doing?
Well, I usually take deep breaths to calm down and read a book because it's something quiet and makes you relax. So sometimes it gets kind of nerve-wracking, but
yeah,
got to go with it.
Well, you got a couple, then you've got, that's right.
Temple Grandin, an autism rights activist and the author of The Autistic Brain, Thinking Across the Spectrum. She spoke at Town Hall on May 20th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of her talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. John O'Brien recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
KUOW and ACT Theater present An Evening with Groucho. The audience becomes part of the show as Frank Ferrante improvises his way through this comedy in true Groucho style.